Today on Maine Calling, the appeal of alpacas, part of our Passions and Pastimes series. Some people find alpacas cute, with their plush fleece and their gentle demeanors. Others call them funny looking, thanks to those woolly bangs and jutting bottom teeth. Either way, these creatures are popular. There are dozens of alpaca farms all over Maine. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today we will learn all about alpacas, their unique traits, and how to care for them. The smallest domesticated relative of the camel, alpacas are valued for their luxurious fleece. In Maine, alpaca fiber is made into everything from socks to blankets. That's why breeding them can be good business. But beyond that, alpacas are part of the state's agritourism industry, with visitors seeking out farms where they can mingle with these easygoing animals and even do yoga alongside them. The popularity of alpacas. Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, strengthening Maine's coastal and island communities through education, health, and support. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Alpacas are both adorable and odd, depending on who you ask, and depending on what their hairdo looks like at the moment. Today, we'll learn all about these domestic creatures and why people enjoy having them, how to care for them, and what different Maine alpaca farms offer. This show is part of our Passions and Pastimes series. Joining me, Corey Pratt, is co-owner of Maine Alpaca Experience and Northern Solstice Alpaca Farm in Unity. Dr. Kelsey Hilton is a veterinarian at Anabesicook Veterinary Clinic in Monmouth, and Rose Bodmer is owner of Lulu's Barn on Westport Island. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you a fan of alpacas or of their soft fleece? What questions do you have about how to raise one? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. If you are on Facebook or Instagram, take a peek at the fun alpaca videos we have there. And Corey, let me start with you. Apparently, the United Nations has designated 2024 as International Year of the Camelids, and camelids include alpacas, so this is their big year. Tell us a little bit about the other camelids and what are the cousins of alpacas and what the differences are.
Yes, I will. Happy to do that. Thank you for having me, Cindy. This is great. Well, this is the year of the camelid, and there are five species. There's the camel, the vicuña, the guanaco or guanaco, depending, the llama, and the alpaca, all in the camelid family. And there are kind of mixed scientific data saying which one originally paired with which to create the alpaca. But the evidence that we're showing most recently is that the vicuña and the camel were bred together to create what is today's alpacas. Alpacas have been in the world for about 3 million years, and they are just an incredible resolution of, some people think the Incans bred those two together to get a much longer but extremely soft fiber. Camels have long fleece, but it's a little bit more coarse. Vicuña are very soft, and they're but very short. So there's a theory that the Incans did that to get this very soft, soft fleece that we have in today's alpaca.
So you probably get the question the most of what are the biggest differences between llamas and alpacas? Those are the ones people get confused. So what would you say?
That's right. Well, those, the two questions, do they spit? And what's the difference between a llama and an alpaca? And they both do spit. It is a defense mechanism for both of them. But the main physical difference looking at them is their size. A llama runs 300 to 600 pounds and 6 feet tall, where an alpaca is much more slight. But the other thing is their personality. And the alpaca has a very shy, timid personality, prefers not to be handled or touched. where a llama you can use as a pack animal because of their size and do treks and things like that with them carrying weight on their back. And the alpaca is just a little bit too slight for that and prefers not to be handled, although ours are all halter and lead trained. And particularly for in the cases out west with fires and floods, you've got to have them trained on halter and lead as a safety mechanism.
Well, so Rose, Corey gave us some idea of what makes an alpaca, but they're pretty unique in some ways. What are some of the special traits to alpacas? I know the teeth are one of them.
They have wonderful teeth. Their teeth grow. So at the time of shearing, you have to cut their teeth down if they're growing too long. They continue to grow if they don't have the proper things to be able to kind of saw them down. The other thing is their personalities. They're so quirky, and each one has their own individual personality. And as a rule, alpacas don't love to be touched. But over time, if they've had some exposure to folks that have been gentle and kind to them, and lots of food, they will come your way and want to explore and see what you're all about. And they're gentle, super gentle animals. I have all gelded males. They get along great. They're very mild and just sort of hang out and they're just a joy to be around and to share with people.
Right, their personalities are what they're famous for. But I'm going back to the teeth, not that I'm hung up on their teeth, but the reason a lot of the pictures of them are so funny is they only have lower teeth, not upper front teeth or something.
Right. They only have one set of teeth, and they have very sharp teeth in the back for fighting, which when they're little, the person that shears them would pull them out so that they don't hurt each other. But that's their ruminants, so they have their three bellies, so they graze on their food. Like a cow would. But yeah, their teeth are very neat and do give them that individual characteristic, that funny look that they have.
They have the roof of their mouth, their palate looks almost serrated, and that helps them when they are pulling. They actually pull the grass. They don't bite and pull the root. They snap the grass off at the surface, and they'll actually grind it with, they have a quite short tongue, and they grind it against that serrated surface of their mouth. And those lower teeth just have to snap that grass off. They have upper and lower molars in the back to grind, but they do, we usually do file down their fighting teeth because those males can get pretty rough if you don't have those teeth filed right down. They fight with each other.
I thought that you said they were so gentle, so they do fight.
The males, the breeding males can get pretty, they will fight for dominance with each other, trying to impress the females.
Ah, okay. That
They have a
the
pecking
animal
order and they have
instinct.
to establish.
All right. And in terms of you just mentioned they eat grass, Rose. I've always heard that they're very low maintenance. They're easy to keep because someone could just be in the suburbs and have a good yard and they'd kind of be happy thriving there. Is that right? Or what's their diet and what does it require?
I feel there's more to it than as simply as putting them in your backyard. I mean, you really want to make sure that you have some grass for them to eat, and because they do pull the grass out by the roots, their grass time is limited, so you want to circulate when they're having grass so that it will grow. I feed mine a diet of alpaca grain, beetroots or shredded beet pulp, and then and hay, and you want to have enough room for them to walk around and exercise and keep them in a place where they can romp around and enjoy their time and not in a little enclosed space. So and there's a lot to an alpaca. It's not as simple as throwing them in your backyard and calling it good. There's also health care that has to happen, and they need shots to keep them healthy so that they don't get parasites and worms.
Well, this brings
Definitely.
me to I didn't hear yet much about your own farm. So, Corey, why don't you tell us what you do there at Northern Solstice Alpaca Farm and what Maine alpaca experiences as well?
Sure. Well, we have two umbrellas. The Maine Alpaca Experience encompasses the farm which is Northern Solstice Alpaca Farm, and also our retail side, because these animals are growing beautiful fleece and we want to put that to use. That is why the majority of people raise alpacas, is for the fleece. At our farm, we bring the calm, peaceful serenity of these animals to people. We have close to 15,000 visitors a year that come just to enjoy the peacefulness of alpacas. And everybody that visits is just amazed by their big eyes, their calm nature. And as Rose said, everyone has their personality, and as a rule, they don't like to be touched. But we have some females that never read that rule book, and they come and snuggle right with you, and they want their pictures taken with selfies. But what we do is serve the public to come in and understand, educate what alpacas are about. We do training seminars. We've been doing this since 2004, and educating the public about alpacas so that there is more information available and about raising them. And as Rose said, it's not just being able to put them in the backyard. They have to have a specific hay. Orchard grass hay is high protein. They're growing hair, so they need to have things like that. They aerate the soil. They're extremely sustainable. They aerate the soil with their pointed toenails, and you rotating the pastures is important. They do have a very small amount of grain. So yeah, educating people about them and raising them. We started selling them originally. We don't do that to have them leave the farm anymore. We have a buy and board program that people can buy them that keep them here. For us, the animals are as much as the retail side, and having them leave was like having our children move out of the house. So we are very excited to have people learn. The kids know what alpacas are. People my age still call them llamas, and having people know the difference is really important.
Great. And Rose, you also do some special activities and things with alpacas at your farm. Tell us about those.
We do. We offer yoga with alpacas outside in our field, where people can come and feed the alpacas, do an alpaca or do a yoga class with them. We also offer art with alpacas, where artists come in and different artists, and we'll set up outside and do art while the alpacas mill around and eat the grass, and people can feed them as well. And then I offer farm visits, like Corey, where people can come and just learn a little bit about them and hang out with them and understand them and just enjoy their nice, calm nature.
Is that what it is? Is what do people get out of having alpacas around while they're doing yoga, while they're painting something? What do you think it adds?
It's so special. We have an alpaca studio where people can see the alpacas from inside of the barn, and the alpacas can watch them. But just having the alpacas around, it's just a wonderful feeling for people because it's so special, and they're just such a lovely animal with a lovely energy that it just adds a special something to whatever you're doing. It's really hard to explain until you've been around them, because they're just such a unique animal with so much love and just gentleness that you feel as they come near you.
I get the sense it's
It,
sort of
that
a
it,
zen thing, right? The
yeah,
aura.
it is,
Zen.
and we're open to we have groups from nursing homes, we have special needs groups, schools, homeschool groups, public school, you name it, organizations that come. And we have so many stories about what type of interaction these folks have had, from an autistic boy wearing a helmet, and the teachers had said he will not interact, and he had the best time. And one of the alpacas that's typically not social went right to him and nose to nose, and you could see the eyes between the two of them connect. And you just never know what kind of experience you're going to have. They're not intimidated by wheelchairs or walkers or crutches or you name it. And we have a deaf alpaca here on the farm, and she has made connections with hearing impaired people for years. It's just really, it's amazing to watch.
Wow. And Rose, you too, right? Do you have people experiencing similar interactions?
Very similar. And the story that I have is I had a gal that came to the farm who was deaf and blind, and a young gal, and had never been around an alpaca before, and super nervous I was about her coming and not knowing how the animals would act around her. So as she came in, all of them just lined up and let her come in, get settled and acclimated. And she was able to walk to each one and just touch them and feel them. And they were on their best behavior. They're so intuitive to that girl that came in to visit that they knew that they had to stand still. And so when she left, they kind of went back to normal, a little spitting happened, communication. But it was just amazed that how they could feel that they needed to be calm and quiet, and they just stood there and let her experience them.
Wow. I want to turn to our veterinarian, Dr. Kelsey Hilton. Dr. Hilton, we've talked a little bit about the unique traits of alpacas. What about in terms of their health and their care? Are there certain either diseases or health concerns that you have to watch for with alpacas?
Yeah. As a veterinarian, I do really enjoy working on them, actually, because I find that they're pleasant to work with. They don't require a ton of fancy handling facilities to work with safely. I think some of the things that make them unique from a veterinary standpoint, one is that I find them, you know, they're relatively more recently introduced to the United States than cattle or some of the other livestock that we work on. And so a lot of the medications are not labeled for use in that animal. And so if they do require a little more veterinary oversight to medicate, because there aren't things that are sort of made for alpacas and tested in alpacas. And so a lot of it is based on research that's been done, but not necessarily like FDA labeling guidelines. So that's kind of a unique thing about if you have to treat an alpaca for an illness. So there are some diseases that we see probably partly because they're in sort of a different environment than they originated. One that I see a lot of, especially in the fall, is meningeal worm, which is something that we can prevent with proper preventative medications. Can cause them to become really ataxic and unsteady on their feet, among other things. I do think that parasites are something we have to pay attention to a little bit more in them, again, because they're sort of in a different environment than where the species originated. And you know, taking care of their diets and their fiber correctly so that they can thrive in that way. But teeth as well, which is their physiology is just a little different from some of our other large animal species that we commonly work with, three stomachs. But they're really fun to work on. I really enjoy doing the work that I do.
Great. Well, more questions about their health a little bit later, but we do need to take a quick break. Our topic today is alpacas and what to know about these unique creatures. Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. We are talking about the appeal of alpacas and why they're popular in Maine. My guests are Dr. Kelsey Hilton. She is a veterinarian specializing in large animals at Anna Bessacook Veterinary Clinic. Rose Bodmore owns Lulu's Barn on Westport Island, and she offers a variety of services and activities involving alpacas. And Corey Pratt is the co-owner of Maine Alpaca Experience and Northern Solstice Alpaca Farm in Unity. Join the conversation. Tell us what you think of alpacas or what you want to know about them. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org or comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And on the line with us now is Connie LaLiberte. She and her husband, Red, own Misty Acres Farm in Sydney. Thanks for calling in, Connie.
Yes.
Say your last name for me. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. LaLiberte.
Okay, great. Thanks. Yes. And tell us how your alpaca farm came about.
So basically, my husband built houses for many, many years, and it becomes a young man's job at some point. So due to just physical labor and time, that really wears a lot on your bones and back, et cetera. So we got looking at some alpacas that were on a farm on the way to my parents, and they had a few. So asked a lot of questions and bought them and dived right in. So
wow.
It's a multifaceted business, yeah, because not only are you breeding seed stock for other farms, but the goal is ultimately to produce a nice, fine, quality fleece and getting that into production so that people can wear it. It has wonderful attributes. It's a lot warmer than wool. It does not have the lanolin in it that people are allergic to usually. And once you start wearing the alpaca, you won't go back to other things. So we,
wow,
in turn, you know, we do sell the livestock, again, to start other farms. But we also do a lot with farms that really would like to have alpacas but really don't want to get into the breeding and that aspect of it. So we do, they do some pets. Usually they're males, but they want the fleece and to have the alpacas themselves. So it's a combination of many things. Just Red and I here, we have 55 head right now. So we're pretty busy.
It sounds like it. Are there,
yes,
particular challenges in running an alpaca farm?
I think they're pretty easy keepers for the most part. Obviously, if they're ill, it's hard for them to tell you what's wrong. And usually alpacas are pretty stoic. So they're herd-minded and don't show those weaknesses lots of times before it's too late that we can do something for them. So that's one of the drawbacks. It just tugs at your heart, you know. But, no, we manage to do all the shearing. Once a year we have a shearer come in. It's an all-day affair. I don't think I'd want to shear, but those guys are rugged and can do it quite well. But it's really more of a peace of mind. I find that going to the barn every day is just, I know you have some physical labor to do, but really it's an enjoyable, they're glad to see you. They're not a hug me, pet me animal, but you take care of them and they know you.
That's great. Well, thank you for sharing that. That was,
yeah,
Connie LaLiberty with Misty Acres Alpaca Farm in Sydney. And, when Connie was talking about the fleece and how it's all about that fine fleece and making sort of the demand for alpacas. So, Rose, could you talk about that a little bit more in terms of what exactly is it about the fleece that is so special?
The fleece is very soft. And like it was said that it's hypoallergenic, so it's not itchy. It's lovely to work with if you're spinning. It's super soft. And it makes lovely warm clothes. Socks are a big hit with folks. Everybody loves alpaca socks. I am not a knitter. I do spin my fleece, but I also do other projects with it, with fiber needle felting. But mainly I bought my alpacas not for the fleece. I bought them just because they were such a unique animal. And I've learned over time all the attributes that they have that is just wonderful, that they offer just their natural fleece. And they're just an amazing animal to own.
The hair itself is actually hollow, so it insulates. And it's great that you can use that fleece. We actually teach people to sort and grade their own fleece, so you know that getting the best fleece for each of the products you're going to make with it.
So that hollowness is what makes it fluffy? Is that?
Yeah, the air pockets in there have an insulating property.
Wow, that's interesting. Rob is calling in now from Stockholm. Hi, Rob, go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm so interested. I'm a farmer myself in Stockholm, Maine. We have my family and I run a herd of heritage variety dual purpose milking cattle. I love hearing about unconventional livestock in Maine. It's just interesting, and I think it's great. I wanted to ask if you could kind of go into the history of alpaca. How has the species or the animal changed in what we use them for today? Were they bred for milk or meat use or double, triple purpose back in their origins?
Great, great question, Rob. Let's hear about, I think they were bred for their fleece. Is that right, Corey?
They were bred for fleece. They don't produce enough milk. They're not a milk producing animal other than for their own offspring. But yes, they were intentionally bred, like we talked about breeding the llama with the alpaca to get the longer and softer fleece. And that's what they are used for. They're too small, as I mentioned, for a pack animal. But the quality of that fleece has improved over the years, the generations and generations. And we're breeding this kind of a standard in the industry that you don't breed two animals just because they can. You, in the National Registry, you improve that quality with each breeding you do. You enhance the characteristics. Maybe the female is missing, and you would put her with a male that has those attributes. So definitely always trying to improve the quality. They have a guard hair. They have a primary and a secondary fiber. And over the years, the goal has been to reduce the amount of that secondary coarser fleece and have that soft, soft fleece. And we have done a really good job of it. And the National Registry, the Alpaca Owners Association, keeps track of the registered animals. It's a great resource for people if they're looking to raise alpacas. They don't do well with other being penned with other animals, but they can be on the same farm. But because of different nutrition needs, different parasite loads, they shouldn't be penned with other farm animals, but they can certainly be on the same farm, just a different holding space.
I see. Thank you so much for your question, Robin, for calling in. Speaking of fleece, Dr. Hilton, Kelsey, I had heard something about sheep that they were bred, they were domesticated, and so basically their physiology ended up, since they were being raised for their wool, they basically would just keep growing their wool or their fleece unless somebody sheared it, because humans kind of, you know, made them that way. So I don't know, with alpacas, is that the case where, I mean, it would actually be harmful for an animal if their fur just keeps on growing and growing and gets weightier. Is that the case with alpacas?
To be honest, I don't know the answer to that question for sure, although I would suspect probably not. Perhaps one of the other speakers here can answer for sure. My understanding is that because they do originate in South America, and there are less domesticated sort of versions of them, that they're sort of more recently domesticated and they don't need to be sheared. Certainly llamas don't need to be sheared every year, in my experience. Keeping them clean and keeping the fleece a high quality probably would be increased by shearing them on a regular basis. But perhaps one of the other respondents can confirm or deny them.
Okay, great. And Corey, go ahead.
Yes, llamas are a little bit different in that they don't. Alpacas don't shed, so they have no way to lose that fleece. Where they are in the Andes Mountains, even though they are a lot of free range, they are owned by someone, and even those are brought down out of the mountains to be shorn every couple of years. But we've seen some really sad situations where animals that were brought onto farms where they weren't well cared for, and they just were let go. It's a health issue for certain, and it could be a death sentence. We shear once a year every year in states that have them where they are a hotter climate. They might even shear twice a year. They do not do well in the heat. In summer, we have fans galore in the barn. Even after they're shorn, they have to be kept cool. So it is critical you remove that fleece at least once a year.
Huh. Okay, great. Let's go to calling in now. It's Deborah Crow. She lives in Florida, and she boards an alpaca at Corey's farm. So that's at Northern Solstice Farm. Hi, Deborah. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, good morning.
So I didn't know there was such a thing until Corey mentioned it about boarding alpacas. How did you decide to do this, and what does it entail?
Well, this started for me about 10 years ago. I had a very good friend who's from Maine who gave me a certificate for a virtual alpaca for Christmas from Northern Solstice Alpaca Farm. And what that was for 1 year, I got to pick my alpaca. They have cameras that you could log into and see your alpaca. You got a packet about all the information. And it was just a wonderful learning process. And that turned into visiting the farm and falling in love with the alpacas. So living in Florida and where I live, I did not have the proper space or the proper care or actually the knowledge to take care of an alpaca. But I am a knitter, and I have a love for the fiber. So I visited the farm, fell in love, and found out about Northern Solstice buy and board program. And what that means is you buy your alpaca, and Corey and Robin take care of them, wonderful care of them. You can go up there and visit them. Again, you've got the cameras that you can watch your alpaca at any time. But you can go visit the farm at any time. Anyone can. You can take them for walks. There's a bench there you can sit and visit. And it was just the perfect thing for me because, number one, I fell in love with my alpaca's name is Truffles. Number two, I get the fiber it's taken and spun into yarn. And I can't tell you how many people across the world in my travels I've met who also have a love for an alpaca. And it's opened the door for so many wonderful friendships.
And tell us a little bit about Truffles. I understand the color is special.
Yes. She's called a rose gray, and she is a kind of a gray color with spots, kind of like a Palomino horse. And she has this dark brown color on her ears, almost like a cat. Please, I'll take up the whole program if you get me started talking about her.
We'll save you for another show on truffles. But she sounds wonderful, really, really special. So thank you so much for giving us a call. That's Deborah Crow. She is from out of state, and she boards in alpaca truffles here in Maine. Let's go now to Beattie. Let's see. Beattie is calling from Camden. Hi, Beattie. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted the program to recognize that these animals came from Peru, or an Ecuador, possibly Bolivia. And they were raised and bred by the Andean people, and those countries tried very hard to not allow them to be smuggled out so that they could keep selling the yarn outside if they wanted to. But they did get smuggled out, and they have a long history in the Andes, and they're wild-related animals. There are two that used to exist. I'm not sure now. But it's very recent in this country. And a lot of the things that people are saying about them ignores their origin.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Beattie. Corey, you had mentioned a little bit about that background before. So they were trying to keep them in the Andes, right? Is that what the...
Yes, importation to the United... Importation to the United States started in 1984, and then I believe it was 19 school programs and things, and I believe that it was 1999 that with Mad Cow they stopped importation. But yes, we've gone on the few that were imported in those years. It was a difficult process for the animal to be imported, but we did have several thousand. And what we have today in the United States is about 350,000. And that's a great number for us. Maine is one of the smaller. Ohio is actually the epicenter, the largest population of alpacas. And that's where we went. We studied for 3 years before we started raising them to learn everything about them, and then became a training facility because of how far we had to travel to learn about them. But the number of farms in Maine, we have, I think it's 60 farms registered. But with program that we have, like Deborah, each of those owners has a registered farm. So 19 of those 60 are people that own animals on our farm. But we do know that they are from Peru, Bolivia, Chile, and those genetics are in the registrations of all of our animals. That's where they're from.
Huh. Well, we'll learn much more, and we have a lot of questions coming in, but we are going to take a quick break right now. We are talking all about alpacas. Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. We will be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Alpacas are beloved for their fine fleece, their gentle nature, and the fact that they're pretty low maintenance. We're learning all about these interesting animals today. Joining me are Rose Bodmer with Lulu's Barn, Corey Pratt with Maine Alpaca Experience and Northern Solstice Alpaca Farm, and Dr. Kelsey Hilton with Anna Bessacook Veterinary Clinic. Share your comments and questions. Have you ever visited an alpaca farm or wanted to own alpacas? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. Dr. Hilton, I just wanted to ask you something because you've mentioned a few times because alpacas, you know, originated in South America, there are certain things that they have issues with here in Maine. I'm just curious how that is, if it's been so long ago that these animals were brought to the U.S., that why would they still have this sort of connection to their past?
Yeah, I think some of it, and a little bit of this is speculation, I guess, but, you know, when Corey was talking about how it was not a large number of animals that was the breeding stock, really, for the animals that we have in the U.S. today. And that may have impacted some health aspects of them as well. But I think elevation probably has something to do with it. My understanding is that places that they originated at were much higher elevation than what most of the animals are living in Maine, potentially a bit wetter climate, and potentially a bit warmer because of that elevation. And as Corey mentioned earlier, certainly heat stress can be a huge issue in the summertime. We've definitely seen problems with that. And so making sure that we can keep them cool to avoid that, and using kind of low stress handling techniques is really important as well. Another thing that can be a concern, I don't feel like we see as many people breeding them as maybe we did 10 years ago, but vitamin D can be an issue. And I'm told that that is suspected to be related to the fact that at higher elevations, you know, you get more sun exposure. And so particularly young animals that are born in the fall or winter months need to have vitamin D supplementation. So, you know, there are just some things that their physiology hasn't necessarily adapted 100% and maybe won't for quite some time to our climate. Although they can live here very, very happily with the right care. And I think that in some ways because we are a more northern state, it probably is easier than it might be in like the southern parts of the country.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we have sort of a related email from Philip. I don't know which one of you wants to try this, answering this. Can alpacas be found natively anywhere in the U.S.? And how and why did they end up in Maine?
I'm not aware of any groups of them, but I am not aware of everything. So perhaps.
Corey?
Yeah. Not native to Maine. If they're in Maine, they were brought here. Same with the U.S. They're native to South America. They do exist now in all 50 states, but they were purchased to go to those states. But they were born here. The ones that we have now, obviously the originals came from South America. What we have now, we have bred in this country, and we don't import as a rule on a large scale anymore. There's no reason to. The quality has even changed and improved from their original ancestors, as I mentioned, and the quality of the fleece.
Okay, we have a question coming in about a camelid from Patagonia called the guanaco. What do we know about that? Rose, is that one of the variations? Or I believe there are two kinds of alpacas, right? This is something else.
I don't know a lot, but I think that it's a wild alpaca llama combo. I'm not sure, but maybe Corey could answer better.
Yeah, the guanaco is a smaller camelid. It's not an alpaca, but it is in the camelid family. And they're way up in Patagonia. and in the mountains, and definitely a wilder animal. And it's bigger than the vicuña, but it's kind of in that, but it is in the genetic camel family.
Okay, and did we already distinguish the two different kinds of alpacas?
The two different alpaca types, there's the Wakaya, spelled with an H, and then that's about 93% of the alpaca population. And then the balance of that is called a Suri, it's Suri, and they have a very silky, redlocky looking, straight, not straight, but it grows down, not the fluffy, fuzzy type. Those are called Suris. We have two of those on our farm. We brought them in for educational purposes. We talked about them so much. We finally brought in a mom and her baby. But they do look quite different, and their fiber processing is different.
I was going to add, I think when I look at a Suri, it reminds me a little bit of maybe like an Afghan hat. Like they're a little more silky and wavy, their fiber.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
I've heard it described as dreadlocks. Is it more like that? Not so fluffy?
It's right. Not matted, but it does grow in those long strands. And as Dr. Helton said, the Afghan hound is a good example. When you see those in show, and when they are not trimmed, that hair can go right to the ground, but you want to keep them shorn as well.
Well, since you've compared them to a dog, I was curious whether you can train alpacas to do certain things. Are they smart enough? Are they reactive to human guidance like that, Rose? Yours are around people all the time. Do they learn from the folks doing yoga, or what do they do?
You can, yeah, they're wonderful. You can train them, and you can train them with certain words, so they'll identify with certain words. For me, it's treats, which is their grain, and that's how I get them to move around. If they should get to a spot where I don't want them, I want to pull them out of a certain fenced-in area to another one, it's simply shaking a bag of treats and yelling treats, and they'll come my way. I've also taught a couple of them to give me kisses. So, I say kiss, and they put their little snouts right on my face. They're very trainable. You have to work at it, but they're very intelligent.
Are they sloppy kisses, or are they dry?
Very much, yes. I am very sloppy. Yeah. You're going to have dirt on your face when after the kiss.
I actually have to ask you another question because we've heard about goat yoga, and same question for that as with alpaca yoga. Is there an issue with droppings if people are on the ground all around the alpacas?
Well, alpacas are really great because of their herd animals, they go in the same spot. So one goes, they all go. And for a little while, they never went in the field that we did the alpaca yoga. So that was never an issue. But one went, and now they have a spot there.
Oh,
so
no.
We clean it up, we stay away, but they're going to use that spot.
That's funny. All right. We have an email from Matt with some pretty straightforward questions. Three questions here. What is the minimum acreage per animal? Talk about fiber processors in Maine. And also, what's the average annual cost per animal? So, Corey, do you want to try to answer all three of those?
Sure. Acreage, the theory that we've been trained on was 6 to 8 animals on an acre if they're going to be grazing, but you also want to provide hay as well. And that's just kind of a rule of thumb. They shouldn't be crowded. If you're going to provide hay, you need less acreage. They eat about 1.5 to 2% of their body weight in intake and dry matter in a day. So they're not expensive to feed as a rule. We have a cat that's more expensive than one of our alpacas to take care of. About $300 a year is a rough estimate. And but the facility, and you'll hear things like they only need a 3-sided shelter. They need a facility that's going to be convenient for you as well as them. They need to be out of the harsh weather. They need to be out of the sun. Talking about the vitamin A and D that we did, they need the sunlight. They shouldn't be out in a rain. And the third part was, tell me the other.
So we talked about cost, fiber processors.
Fiber processors in Maine are limited. We have a mill right in Thorndike, Maine. Troy, Maine, sorry. And it's they are now processing alpaca fleece. We have used mills as far away as Pennsylvania, Connecticut, but we all shear at the same time here in Maine. So it's not a quick process. Everybody's shearing at the same time and the mills are receiving the fiber in at the same time. But there are some mills in Maine that do fiber production. You don't want to process it in the same, or most processors don't like to do straight alpaca because it is so fine. A lot of times they'll blend it with wool. We go to a mill that will do 100% alpaca, but it does require calibrating their equipment and cleaning it because it doesn't have any lanolin the way sheep's wool does. You don't want to process it in equipment that has the lanolin all over it and then contaminating the alpaca.
Oh, interesting. So also when you say wool, then that does refer to sheep's wool. You wouldn't call alpaca
Correct.
Fleece wool. Okay, terminology there. And I know with all the fiber artists in Maine, enthusiasts, I would think, do they just come to your farms and try to get a little bit for themselves to spin and make into yarn?
Yes, they do. We have folks that attend our shearing event. We usually shear mid-May, and we have folks that will come to see the fleece come off the animals and then make offers for it. We have a lot of hand spinners here in Maine that just love the term spinning in the grease originated with sheep's wool because that's what you're spinning, but they do it with alpaca as well, and it's fabulous. And we do have two store locations that we sell what's called the roving, which is the process of having the hair already combed and ready to go in a spinning wheel and or make it into yarn. We have the yarn from our own animals with their name, and there is the color of the yarn and a photo of each individual animal. A lot of farms don't do that. They'll pool it all together. But we have 36 animals that give us about 400 pounds of fleece a year.
Well, you mentioned the colors. So, Rose, I know that's kind of a thing. In fact, when Deborah called in, she talked about how special the color was of truffles. So what are the more common colors and what are the more unique ones?
Well, definitely the most common color is the white alpaca. I have two of those. And then I have various colors of brown and one black. And black, I believe, is maybe the most sought after color. When I bought my alpacas, fiber wasn't the reason that I bought them. So as far as putting my energy into the fiber part, that's never really been my thing, although that's what they're known for. For me, having alpacas was really just about the joy of owning them. So Corey might be able to answer better than I about maybe the more desirable and just a little more information on that.
Are there certain coveted colors, Corey?
Black is the rarest. You're absolutely right about that. And it took us 13 years of breeding to produce one black. And it was finally Truffle's daughter, Black Onyx. And it is out of our 36. She stands out. And it's imagine being able to knit a sweater with Onyx's yarn. It never fades. The color doesn't wash out. It doesn't have to be dyed. It's absolutely beautiful. There are 16 registered colors, and then there are other variations even beyond that. So the color chart is quite extensive. White is what originally they were brought in, and the Incans loved to have white because they could dye it all the bright colors, and that was the status in society, was your color. So now we have a much more diverse color group.
Hmm. All right, I'm going to squeeze a quick question for Dr. Hilton. Do alpacas communicate? Do they make certain noises to indicate something?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that I actually think many young veterinarians are a little surprised and taken aback when they first start working with alpacas. They have a lot of humming noises that they make. And you know, I can infer sort of what I think these things mean based on, you know, what we learn and also kind of my experience with other animals and animal behavior. But particularly the humming, I think most people, if you go to visit an alpaca, you're going to hear some humming and you're going to notice that. And there are some sort of gargly sounds that they'll make as well. And I apologize. I might not know orgles or bugles, there's probably, Corey could probably say the actual terminology for that. But
that's great. No, we're out of time. Otherwise, I would go into the gorgles or whatever they are. But thank you so much for sharing all that. And thank you all of us for joining us today. Corey Pratt is co-owner of Maine Alpaca Experience and Northern Solstice Alpaca Farm in Unity. Dr. Kelsey Hilton is a veterinarian at Anna Bessacook Veterinary Clinic. And Rose Bodmer is owner of Lulu's Barn on Westport Island. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy, and our theme song was composed by Mike Jandreau. Visit the Maine Calling website to sign up for our weekly newsletter or to listen to past programs. And congratulations to Sonia of East Waterboro, the first winner of a Maine Calling mystery book bundle. Through June 2024, subscribers to the Maine Calling newsletter will be entered into a weekly drawing to win a mystery book bundle. And you've been listening to Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. This is Maine Public Radio.